Welcome to the Blood Cancer Experience, a podcast series presented by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. This series connects people affected by blood cancers to their community with stories of hope, healing, and help.
Hi, I'm George Athens, your host for this ongoing series of podcasts presented by the LLSC. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Rena Buckstein, an oncologist and hematologist associated with the Sunnybrook Hospital in Toronto. Our topic of discussion is myelodysplastic syndromes, or MDS. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, George.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background, your specialty, and why you chose this field of practice?
Sure. So I am a hematologist. That means I treat blood diseases, and I focus on the blood cancers. So the malignant side of hematology are blood diseases. In order to become a hematologist, you have to do medical school and internal medicine and then hematology, and then you often do a fellowship, and that's what I did. So lots of years of training, and I've been in practice as a hematologist at Sunnybrook for 23 years at the Odette Cancer Center. So why do I focus on blood cancers and specifically myelodysplastic syndromes? Well, first of all, I treat all myeloid cancers. So that includes MDS and myeloproliferative diseases, as well as acute myeloid leukemia. But I also treat lymphoma as well, and as well as aplastic anemia. Now, why did I choose myelodysplasia? I was always kind of fascinated in bone marrow failure disorders, what causes the bone marrow to fail. I loved microscopy, looking under the microscope, seeing what you're up against and making diagnoses from what you see under the microscope. And when I started in MDS, it was a very early in the field. It was a burgeoning field. It's become a field where we're starting to get targeted agents based on our sort of experiments in mice and in using human cell lines. We're now having from bench to bedside therapies that we can apply in the clinical trial space in myelodysplasia. So just overall, always challenged, always attracted to the most challenging diseases, bone marrow failure, bone marrow, microscopy, and difficult diseases. I'm always attracted to the toughest nuts. And yeah, that's just the way I am.
Well, it's always good to have a challenge, and this one is significant. Can you just dig a little deeper into MDS then?
Sure. So, you know, MDS stands for myelodysplastic syndromes. In the new classification, it's proposed to change the name to myelodysplastic neoplasms, because we now recognize this as a form of blood cancer. Although it's not the kind of the traditional cancer that we think of, it is neoplastic in that it's clonal, meaning there's a malignant clone that's driving the disease. And it's a malignant clone of the stem cell, of the myeloid stem cell. People have a hard time understanding what stem cells are, but, you know, kind of, I always give the analogy to my patients in the clinic. Think of your like great, 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 great grandfather. And that's your progenitor that led to you being created. And the bone marrow stem cell is the most primitive cell that gives rise to all the elements of the blood, both myeloid and lymphoid. And MDS is a disease of the myeloid stem cell. Now, these stem cells are uncommon. They can self-renew, or they can mature and commit to become either myeloid or lymphoid, and eventually differentiate or mature into the elements of our blood, our red cells, our white cells, our platelets, and there are many forms of white blood cells. So we, when we look under the microscope to make the diagnosis of myelodysplasia, we see aberrant or abnormal maturation of the cells. That's why it's called dysplastic. That's not normal. We can't really see the stem cells. We can see rare stem cells that look like leukemia blasts in many patients with MDS, But as the disease progresses, as we see more and more of these immature cells in the bone marrow, we call those blasts, then we can see that the disease is sort of in the form of evolution towards the terminal disease that can occur in a third of the patients, called acute myeloid leukemia. And when the MDS myeloid stem cell is damaged due to genetic lesions, chromosomal abnormalities, then the offspring are damaged as well. So, you know how we inherit our eye color from our parents? Well, the same mistakes in the DNA that our parents might pass on to us can also get manifested in the offspring of the damaged stem cell. And these damaged genetic lesions can then lead to a variety of things. So one, impaired maturation, so that instead of fully formed and mature red blood cells, white cells, and platelets that get released, they're damaged in some way. They don't survive as long in the circulation. They don't attack infections as well. The white blood cells don't work as well to fight infections. The platelets don't work as well to mop up damages that lead to bleeding. And so patients then present with bruising and bleeding propensities. And in the case of the red blood cells, not only is there a reduced number of red blood cells formed, they're the ones that are formed and released into the circulation have a shortened survival. So they don't live 120 days as they ought to. They might only live 60 days. And as a result, the patient presents with reduced blood counts, the most common one being anemia and a low hemoglobin and symptoms that come from that, because they have less oxygen carrying capacity when their hemoglobins are reduced, or they may present with super low white cell counts or low platelet counts and the result in infections and bleeding that can occur. Now, it's not just a genetic lesion that occurs in the stem cells that leads to the disease. We now have insight into the fact that it's the environment in which these stem cells are growing that may be potentiating or contributing to this defective or ineffective bone marrow production. So we call that ineffective hematopoiesis. And there are a number of new agents that are trying to target this by attacking the damaging effects from the bone marrow environment, and also to promote the maturation of the cells so that they don't get stuck in the assembly line in an immature stage, but actually can be fully formed and released and function. There's just one more thing I wanted to mention, is that in MDS, because there's DNA damage can beget more DNA damage. So we call this sort of a genetically unstable disease. So you may start off with a clone with a certain amount of genetic damage, but over time, it may acquire more mutations, it may acquire more chromosomal abnormalities that lead to an even more immature and damaged bone marrow and bone marrow stem cells. And eventually, in about a third of the cases, the disease can progress to the dreaded acute myeloid leukemia. But that happens only about a third of the time.
Okay. So what are the treatment options then for MDS? What should somebody consider when choosing a treatment, or do they choose at all?
Yes. So I've been lucky enough, to be in practice as long as I have, to see the evolution of treatment options in myelodysplasia. To decide on what kind of treatment to recommend to your patient, it depends on many things. So one, you have to calculate what somebody's risk score is. And by risk, we mean risk of developing leukemia in a short period of time, and risk of shortened survival, meaning the disease curtailing the survival of the patient because the blood counts are so low, or because the chromosomes are so abnormal, or a variety of other factors. So the most important thing we do and decide on treatment is calculate a risk score. And we have a variety of prognostic risk scoring systems, which we can talk about in a second. But essentially, we kind of dichotomize our patients into low risk and high risk. So a low risk patient isn't at imminent risk of developing leukemia and has a survival that's, you know, measured in years. And in which case, our goal of therapy is to try to rehabilitate and improve bone marrow production of the elements that are reduced. So in the case of anemia, increase the hemoglobin. In the case of somebody being red cell transfusion dependent, getting them off of transfusions. In the case of somebody who has a low platelet count and is, you know, having symptoms from that, raising the platelet count to reduce the risk of bleeding. In the case of a very low white cell count, trying to bring up the white cell count to reduce the risk of infection. So the goals are to improve blood counts. As a result of that, often that leads to improvement in quality of life because if someone's no longer needing transfusions or they're no longer symptomatically anemic, they feel better and they have more energy to do their day-to-day activities and carry on a normal lifestyle. So quality of life, of course, is a big goal in low-risk treatment. Now, rarely a low-risk patient will also be offered a treatment that's normally given to higher risk disease, what's called a class of drugs called hypomethylating agents. And that's an option as well. And for higher risk disease, we have to first decide, is the patient young enough and fit enough to have a bone marrow transplant? Because that's the only curative therapy that we have, what's called an allogeneic bone marrow stem cell transplant. And if they are, then we will often make arrangements for that to proceed, find a donor and refer them for that. In cases where they are not eligible for a transplant because they're, you know, above the age of 72, 73, or too many health problems that would make it too risky, then we offer them hypomethylating agents. And of course, we always have clinical trials for our patients to participate in, and we recommend that they participate in clinical trials because the future, especially in higher risk disease, is probably doublet or even triplet therapy to improve the outcomes that we're seeing with hypomethylating agents, which are good, but could be better.
So I'm curious, with all of these various treatments, there has to be side effects. How do you deal with that?
So the low risk treatment options that I mentioned, the growth factors don't have a lot of side effects. They're really not even worth mentioning. The iron chelators can cause kidney impairment. They can cause diarrhea. They can cause skin rash. And we accept a certain amount of side effects and can usually manage them, but sometimes the drugs have to be stopped if they're very severe. For higher risk disease, the major side effects are nausea, which we can prevent with anti-nausea medications. And at the beginning, especially in the first 3 months, sometimes things get worse before they get better. So the white cell count can go down, the platelet count can go down. Sometimes patients get a fever and an infection and have to be hospitalized. And then we manage that with antibiotics. But the side effects from hypomethylating agents are usually the worst in the first few cycles, and then they get better as the bone marrow starts to improve and function. Okay. So we have ways of managing side effects.
So we've covered an awful lot of ground in a short period of time. I just wonder, before we wrap it up here, is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience about this?
Sure. One of the questions that was asked of me is, what do I think a person recently diagnosed with MDS should know? And what I recommend is the following. One, they should know their disease classification. There are many forms of myelodysplasia. There's different names attached to them. And it's important to know what that is. They should know what their risk score is. So should they ask their hematologist, oncologist, what is my risk score? Am I low risk? Am I high risk? Which risk classification system have you used? Do I have any unfavorable chromosome abnormalities or unfavorable mutations? They want to ensure that chromosome testing has been done and a procedure called next generation sequencing of their DNA to see what mutations their disease harbors. They want to know if they're eligible or need a bone marrow transplant. And if so, ask that they get referred to a bone marrow transplant center, as well as help arrange and facilitate the testing of siblings and children if necessary to find a donor. They should also, I always request that my patients, especially the ones that I'm sharing with hematologists in the community, is that they should keep a record and log of their hemoglobins, their treatments, and their transfusions. How many units of blood, what days, how often, what their hemoglobins were before they got their transfusions and so forth. And then finally, I always recommend that they ask about clinical trials, because that is how you get access to the latest and greatest. And it's actually proven that people who go on clinical trials actually live longer than people who don't go on clinical trials. So clinical trials are really important in how we're going to continue to make advances in this disease that is still a very big challenge for hematologists.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. That's an awful lot of wonderful information. We appreciate you taking time from your busy day, and congratulations on all your wonderful work over the years. It's really valued by everybody that is challenged by this type of cancer. Thanks, Rena.
My pleasure. Thanks, George.
If listeners have any questions about this podcast or the subject discussed today, or need any support or resources to navigate your experience, I encourage you to connect with a community services lead in your region. For more information, visit bloodcancers.ca. If you liked our podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. You can find us wherever you access your favorite podcasts. We also welcome any ideas for our program, so we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email with your suggestions or comments at info@bloodcancers.ca.
And finally, this podcast was made possible with the generous support of Bristol Myers Squibb.
Until next time, stay well and stay connected.
Thank you for listening to The Blood Cancer Experience, a series of podcasts presented by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. We are committed to supporting the blood cancer community through programs, services, and research. This podcast is presented by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada.